Hi, this is Mike Grell, and I'm here with the Long Box guys, whoever the hell they are.
We're on the road, we're going home, to the place where wild nerds roam, with pretty girls and dudes and kids. Going to cons is our escape. It's like a Mecca for geeks in a star-filled sky, where you can meet all your heroes and none of them fight.
Hey man, this is Kevin Smith, Silent Bob from all those terrible Jay and Silent Bob type pictures, and you are listening to Thinking Outside the Long Box. Comics talk for comics fans.
Hey everybody, and welcome to the Long Box, guys. My name is Thomas Strange. With me, as always, are my best friends since I was a little kid. Josh, how you doing? What are you drinking?
I am doing good, and I am drinking a New England IPA from Sam Adams.
And you are looking good, my friend. All that exercise is helping out.
The arms are coming back.
Boom. Tommy, how you doing? What are you drinking?
I'm doing okay, and I'm drinking some Basil Hayden's because it's delicious. How are you doing, Tom? What are you drinking?
I'm doing great. I got a Diet Coke over here, and I got something I call Thompson's Water Seal, which is Thompson's Scotch, the best scotch you can buy by the gallon for $9. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mikey, what are you doing, and what are you drinking?
I'm doing excellent, and I have Eagle Rare Bourbon Whiskey with a root beer chaser. Shut the hell up, Josh. I don't want to hear your shit. Sorry, I just wanted to stave that off before we even got into it.
You wanted to nip that in the bud? Speaking of nipping a bud, vampires would do that all the time. Boom! Segwayed!
Oh, wow.
Yes, if you had a bud and you nipped him, you might be a vampire. Today's topic is vampires in the comic book universe. We're going to talk mostly about Marvel, I think, but there's a couple of cool DC ones and even one independent vampire I'd like to talk about.
I'm going to talk about nothing but independents, my friend.
Oh,
I bet we're going to have a couple crossovers then. So, Mikey, why don't you start and give us maybe what the definition of a vampire is, because as everyone knows, you're the vampire expert. And, yeah, we'll go from there.
If you don't feel like that, Mike, I can grab that one.
Go ahead and grab it, Josh. Grab it with all your might.
Should I have gone with the philosophy major to talk about vampirism? Because it's actually kind of deep and goes across so many cultures as the blood-sucking undead turn up in a lot of mythology.
So originally, pre-1800 vampires are more like zombies. They are bloated, haunting corpses that generally wander around the neighborhoods in which they died. It wasn't really until the early 19th century, early 1800s, a author, John Polidori, writes a book called The Vampire, which becomes the inspiration for Bram Stoker's Dracula in 1897.
Quick side point on that one, that's a little bit of a Eurocentric viewpoint because in Japan, vampires were very different also. And Josh, I know you know good Japanese vampire ones too.
Sure, but we're sticking with the Eastern and Western European version because that's the derivation of the word vampire. And sure, there are myths all over the world that are very similar, but we're going to stick to that. So vampire is a lot of Slavic references to vampire spelt differently. And then there are also Striga, Virokolakis, and Strigoi. But mostly people think that the word derived from the Turkish word ubir for witch. Later on, and so that's basically when they're basically bloated monsters, and then both Polidori and Bram Stoker bring them into the world. Stoker has references Vlad Dracul, hence the name Dracula. He really knows absolutely nothing about the actual historic figure and just really goes on just some tiny bits of information, mostly just stealing his name and knowing he was a ruler in Western Europe. And so the vampire myth of the smooth, cool, and superpowered undead really stems from Bram Stoker and then just becomes slowly edges its way into popular culture and really just explodes. It becomes one of the most popular mythological creatures in modern literature.
Till Twilight ruined it.
Yeah, until they became sparkly teenagers.
I'm just kidding. If you like Twilight, we don't hate on this podcast. Maybe a little.
A little bit.
And vampires have also kind of become a little bit of a euphemism for the other sometimes disenfranchised groups will take the vampire on. Goth kids absolutely certainly did. As, you know, part of their own and used not only as a good guy but also as a bad guy. Vampires can be almost anything you want because, you know, they're entirely a creature of myth, supposedly. So, Mike, what's one of your favorites?
So I'm going to talk about Marvel Comics. Now, Marvel Comics, dating back to Timely Comics back in the 1940s, they had vampires. They had vampires going all the way through the 50s until the Comic Book Code of Authority came out. No longer allowed to have supernatural creatures like vampires. They relaxed the code back in 1971. And in 1972, because he was already part of public domain, Marvel was like, we'll just take Dracula. Because if we're going to have a vampire, we might as well go with the most famous. They came out with a comic book that lasted about 70 issues called Tomb of Dracula. Or Tome of Dracula. Sorry.
Wait, I thought it was Tomb of Dracula. T-O-M-B.
T-O-M-B, right? That's Tomb.
Yeah,
right?
Tomb. Tomb. Yeah, Tome would be T-O-M-E.
Tome. With a B. Tome.
Tomb.
All right.
That's Tomb.
Shut the fuck up. I'm on my third drink. So Tomb of
Continue on.
Tomb of Dracula was...
Can you spell wind and wind for me?
Sure. Wind is spelled W-H-I-N-D. Wind. So Tomb of Dracula features Dracula as its main character, even though he's still the bad guy in the series. Lasts for about 70 issues. The reason why it lasts for 70 issues is because of two things. First, Marv Wolfman takes over after the seventh issue, and he loves Dracula and is able to weave stories in, still making Dracula the bad guy, but making him an interesting character. But what really saves it is Gene Colan, one of the greatest artists of the 1970s. When Stan Lee announced that he was thinking about doing a Dracula comic book, Colan wanted in because he loved drawing horror so much, and it was the artwork that actually made this comic as great as it was. Dracula appears in a number of other issues and crossovers with other, you know, supernatural characters like Werewolf by Night, but more importantly, he's also crossed over with a whole bunch of superheroes, including the X-Men.
I was just going to put one thing in there real quick. When he crossed over with the X-Men, one of the great little bits aside from that was that Kitty Pryde holds up a cross and Dracula slaps her aside and says, Jewess, you have no faith in that, and then goes to throttle her and burns his hand on her Star of David.
And Nightcrawler.
I just like that from that one.
And is it a Mezuzah or a Star of David?
It was a Star of David.
Star of David.
I don't remember.
Why would she have a mezuzah around her neck?
A mezuzah? A lot of people wear mezuzahs.
I thought those were only – now, forgive me. You know this better than me. I thought the mezuzah was the thing on the door.
It can be, but it's also – you can wear it as a gold pendant and it has a tiny scroll in it.
Oh, okay. Mezuzah to me was always at the doorway, not on your body.
All righty.
Sorry for that aside. I just really like that. And Mike, why were those monster figures so important pre comic book code of authority?
Well, there are a lot of reasons, but mainly because a lot of these people who were writing comics books came from the pulps and they loved the horror story. And the horror genre really was taking off because of a lot of the guys from World War II were coming back and they wanted more adult themed comics. to help them deal with all the stuff, the horrors that they had seen. So that's why horror comics like EC Comics really pushed the edge. They were not for kids. They were aiming at an adult reader, but unfortunately, the 10-cent plague happened.
Yeah, I really enjoy when Tom goads Mike into more exposition. Yeah. This is one of my favorite things about the podcast.
Yeah, and I really love it when I'm three sheets to the wind when you goad me for more exposition too.
But that's an important part of the history of comic books. That odd point after World War II when superheroes became kind of blasé and everyone started reading other kind of comic books. Though that's when the humor comic book, the romance comic book, and the horror comic book really took off.
So I think I've covered Dracula. Why don't we go over to LT because he's going to talk about an independent.
One of my favorite characters is from Astro City, the Confessor. He was a vampire who was also a priest. And he would wear a cross on his chest, even though it hurt him, because of his faith. And he was just a brilliant, brilliant character. And we've talked about him before on the podcast, but still one of my favorite vampire characters.
Now, when the character decided to step down, who took over for him?
Altar Boy.
Now, what's the best part about the Altar Boy taking over for him?
Everybody thought he was also a vampire, so they kept doing things to fend him off that they would do to a vampire, like holding up mirrors or throwing holy water at him. And none of it worked because he wasn't a vampire.
But he'd play along to feign the weakness sometimes. Like, oh, no, holy water.
Oh, no, holy water. And then he would just totally kick their ass.
Oh, I barely got through that holy water shower you threw at me. Man, you almost overcame my vampire powers. Altar Boy was one of my favorite characters for playing along with that stupid shit. That's the indie I was going to mention. Josh, you got a fave?
I am going to go with Pronchus Cassidy from Preacher.
I'm sorry. Can we just go right back to the Confessor? A little fun Alec fact. In Alan Moore's top 10 Beyond the Furthest Precinct, the Confessor has a cameo as the minister at Dust Devil's mother's funeral. So crosses over not just in Astro City, but over into one of our favorite series, top 10. Sorry.
Love top 10.
Back to you, Josh.
That was a great Alex fact, though.
Yeah. I've just recently been watching and trying to read along and watch Preacher. I only get to watch it when I work out, and I only get to read it afterwards. So I'm just chipping away. But I really do like Cassidy. He's one of those just batshit crazy side characters who is just all over the map. And it's just – it just immediately adds that twist to the entire Preacher world that you just don't know what's going to show up. The comics are just all over the map. There's heaven, there's hell, there's vampires. There's just no rhyme or reason, and there's no reason to expect anything than the bizarre, which is what I'm beginning to really enjoy about both the book and the show.
Have you watched it? So you've seen the first season?
Yeah, I am almost all the way through the second season's first episode.
When those angels come to go after the preacher and Cassidy thinks they're there for him, he kills them, and then they show up again. He's like, are you
sure? Right,
what? Come on, man.
It's also fun that Cassidy is probably the more moral of the three characters. I would say he is in a lot of instances. He goes for the high ground a lot more often than some of the others.
I would argue that point, but Josh hasn't finished reading the series, and I don't want to spoil anything for him.
Thank you.
All right.
Yeah, so LT does, though. Go ahead, LT.
I was going to say that I love Cassidy's almost embodiment of the punk aesthetic. He just loves the rock and roll lifestyle so much.
He does personify Dilly Gaff, if anyone does.
And his pronunciation of his very Gaelic name also is very Pontius Pilate.
Very nice. All right. Well, let me toss one of my picks out there. I'm going to go with Baron Blood. You guys remember Baron Blood from the Invaders? Oh, good. Baron Blood, also known, I believe his name was Farnsworth, was an English aristocrat who was screwed out of his inheritance, but he gets to travel the world and pursue his own passion, which is vampire lore. He gets so into it that he actually meets the real Dracula. Dracula bites him and sends him back to England to sow the seeds of discontent in the English countryside because he hates England. Baron Blood decides the best way to sow discontent in the English countryside is to become a Nazi. Fair enough, it's the eve of World War II. And he becomes a superpowered villain Nazi. Now, he also has some superpowers not normally associated with vampirism because Nazi scientists start imbuing it with these other things. He has a formula that makes him much more immune to the sun, so he can be in the sun for a while. His strength gets enhanced. A couple other things. Glider wings. So Baron Blood, a real fun vampire character to fight. And he does turn Captain America into a vampire for a short amount of time. So we get to see a vampiric Captain America show up, which, thanks, yeah. I believe that issue is actually called Fangs for the Memories. It's a pun like that. Mikey, what's your next, since I took yours?
Oh, well, I'm just going to build right off of that and go to Spitfire, also appearing in The Invaders. Baron Blood is the great uncle for Spitfire, also known as Lady Jacqueline Falsworth Crichton. She is a young lady. She is drained of her blood by her uncle. In order to save her life, they give her a transfusion with the blood from the original Human Torch, the android.
Which should have been an android blood, right? That can't work.
Yeah, but mixing the android blood with the vampirism gives her super speed, and when she runs, she leaves a trail of fire, which is really a cool visual in a comic book. She was one of my favorite members of the Invaders when she did appear, and she had a great storyline going on. And because she's a vampire, she's also immortal. And she's, even though she's really old now, so she was a contemporary of Captain America, she still looks like a 18 or 19-year-old girl. So that has a lot of weird things going on. She's currently dating the Union Jack, who is an MI5 spy, and their age difference is quite significant.
Not to mention that the original Union Jack was her uncle.
Her father was
her father, yeah.
So,
so weird little.
Baron Blood and Union Jack were brothers.
Yes.
And they did not realize it. And when they fought during World War I, Union Jack actually kills him or wounds him severely. So he has to go run away and hide for the rest of the war. But just fun little stuff. And Roy Thomas, who wrote The Invaders, loved vampires, loved England, and all of World War II comics. And so if you get a chance to go back and read those old Invaders, it's a good time. Roy Thomas does an excellent job with that. Tommy, who do you got next?
I have Vampirella.
Drink!
Created in 1969, been around forever, created by Forrest Ackerman, Trina Robbins, daughter of Lilith from the Bible, fantastic vampire hunter character, had crossovers all over the place. She had crossovers in Aliens and all over the place in comics. The storylines that I like the best were the Vampirella Master Series with Grant Morrison doing some of the writing. Fantastic story. Tom, you're looking at me weird.
Well, only because you said you were going to just go with indies. Now, I thought Marvel – I could be wrong. I'm just asking. Didn't Marvel buy Vampirella?
It's a Dynamite
Dynamite,
property,
okay.
Which I consider you know, indie because they're really not one of the top two.
Sure. You know, that's, I'd go with Dynamite being indie. I just kind of had it in my head that Marvel grabbed her up. They should grab her up if they had the chance, but I guess they didn't. Dupe. All right, Josh, what do you got next?
I have the greatest bovine vampire Marvel history.
Oh, I knew it. I was about to say that Hellcow.
Hellcow. Hellcow.
You son of a bitch, Hopper. You stole my favorite vampire.
Victory is mine.
So how did
yes, Hellcow oddly appeared in Man-Thing in the 70s. And then, of course, dredged back up as the as a apt villain for Deadpool to face down. Who doesn't love a bovine, an undead bovine supervillain?
Howard the Duck doesn't.
Yeah, Howard the Duck doesn't.
Well, screw Howard the Duck. Everyone roots for Hellcow during that freaking showdown. Does anyone like go Howard the Duck?
Greatest duck in the universe, Howard the Duck.
Other than Leia Thompson, I can't think of one person.
Yeah.
So, how did Bessie become the Hellcow? Wasn't she bitten by a vampire?
I honestly don't know.
Yes, she was. There you go. Boom. There's the origin.
Bitten by a cow, bitten by a vampire.
Yeah.
There you go.
Josh, by the way, Josh, thank you for making your role versus exposition, which Mike was trying to make you roll there.
I was like, whatever.
I tried to calm you, and you wouldn't have none of it.
What, you want me to look that up? Fuck that.
One of Hopper's traits is he's immune to the exposition effect in this game. So he doesn't have to make the role. He's like, yeah, sure. Why not?
Yeah. Even though our entire medium of podcasting is literally just the sound of our voice, brevity is still something I cherish. Except when I'm really hammered.
Then you're going to hate LT's next one.
Then Mike has to cut out like 18 minutes of me rambling about bullshit. Diane doesn't have to hear the word.
I got to edit that out, too.
Oh. Carry on.
My wayward son.
Ooh.
I will just go with my next one, and that's going to be the living vampire, Morbius.
Jim.
Nobody has to drink on that one?
Yeah, he's not a vampire.
He's not. Isn't he?
He's a douche nut. He has none of the vulnerabilities. He's like a
doesn't he?
He
needs blood transfusions.
A pale shadow of a vampire, but that would make him more vampiric than he actually is.
I just kind of like the character because he's kind of fun to watch, you know, struggle with his own. I need to drink blood. I can just go rob a blood bank. It's not the same. He goes on killing sprees sometimes and becomes this huge anti-hero, kind of Punisher-esque kind of creature for a while, which was kind of fun to watch. I like the fact that science is what made him a vampire, and he, during the Spider-Man Spider Island whole debacle, he almost cures the spider plague that was going on, but he turned it back on himself because he was actually just researching something for himself. So he almost cured the spider plague all by himself, but he's like, oh, but maybe this will work for me.
Yeah, but science vampires are like fast zombies.
They're not like fast zombies.
Everyone who likes zombies doesn't like – if you are the fucking zombie buff, fast zombies are not zombies. It's just not how zombies roll. They roll slow.
The only time it works is when it's Quicksilver, and then it's kind of humorous.
That's fine. But that's picking – super fast needles out of stationary haystacks.
Exactly.
Well said, my friend.
I don't think it was well said.
Was it?
No, probably not. But carry on. Let's just keep going. Past that.
Are you looking forward to the movie that they have announced for Mobius?
I don't even know what direction they're going to take that in. Well,
Jared Leto's doing it, so it's going to be weird.
Yeah. But the thing is that Marvel's now cropping up with the things that are not connected in any way to the universe, which I feel they're going to do that with Mobius. So, like, the Venom movie has no chance of being in the MCU.
Right. Well, it's Sony's doing this also because they own the Spider-Man rights.
Yeah, well, so Disney bought so does it matter anymore?
Yeah, because Disney doesn't own Sony.
Not yet.
So, yeah, it kind of matters to Sony.
Disney's a cooking something up.
I mean, but Sony allows the Spider-Man rights to go to Disney anyway, so.
As long as they help out with their movies, so.
Right. Yeah. So I feel that Mobius is going to be the same way. I don't think they're going to take a chance and roll Mobius in with any other Marvel character. It's just going to be a standalone film.
And I need to correct something I said and something you're saying. It's Morbius, not Mobius. Mobius is
right.
The artist.
Mobius is Drip.
Or an artist from Belgium.
Yeah, I had to be careful to keep putting that R in there myself because it is Morbius, not Mobius.
Yeah, so I mean, it might be good, but I think there's just no way to judge it because it's going to be one of those standalones. Like, did you watch the latest trailer for Venom that came out this week?
I saw the first trailer. I didn't need to see the second trailer.
Yeah, it's probably wise.
Do you guys want me to go grab you another cup of Haterade?
Yeah, if you could.
No,
I'm parched.
After watching that first trailer. If you're going to make a movie about Spider-Man's arch enemy, you might want a remote chance that Spider-Man could appear eventually.
It's a good point. It's a fine point, actually.
Yeah.
And I got to stop talking about hate because I just posted like a huge martial arts thing on our webpage and then a picture of our good friend Iron Fist not being able to get into a lotus position.
Yeah. I saw that too, and that's disconcerting.
Yeah.
That was after he gave up on his iPod, though, right?
With the iPod again. You had to get LT started.
I know, seriously.
I wish my fingers could emit mace through the internet.
I always wish I could just punch people through the dick on the internet. That's the dick punch.
Dick punch internet.
Yeah.
Bill Gates is he's cooking something up.
He's cooking up something.
He's like, Steve Jobs, you go to the afterlife. Send me some messages. Tell me what we're gonna have to merge a little science and a little voodoo here. Mikey, who you got next?
Next, I have one of the greatest X-Men ever, Jubilee. So, before you start shitting on me, allow me to explain. In 2010, friend of the podcast, Victor Gishler, writes a book called The Death of Dracula, and it leads to a storyline called The Curse of the Mutants. And in this storyline, the son of Dracula, Zaris, plans on taking over from Dracula by killing Dracula, and then he wants to turn the X-Men into his slaves and turn all the X-Men into vampires. So his plan is to detonate a vampire pathogen bomb, which he does, and it covers Jubilee, turning her into a vampire. And his plan is to get Jubilee there. He knows the X-Men will follow. Then he'll be able to convert all the X-Men into vampires. However, it doesn't go according to plan when Jubilee doesn't go to the meeting with all the vampires. She goes to Utopia, and that's when he decides, fuck it, we're going to send all the vampires to Utopia and turn all those mutants into superpowered vampires. And, of course, Colossus is one of the guys out on the front line because Cyclops is like, only people who are invulnerable can go out and fight the vampires. Everybody else stay in. And so it is a massive attack of vampires against X-Men, and it is a literal bloodbath. It's a great series. You should check it out. It's called Curse of the Mutants, 4-issue series, and Jubilee happens to become a vampire, and she's still a vampire.
Who else gets to be on that front line? Who else is immune?
Well, Rogue.
Okay, yeah, sure. Toucher. Boom.
Yeah. Armor. Husk. All X-Men you probably don't know. Emma Frost because she could turn into a diamond.
Okay, one.
Yeah.
Kitty Pryde could have been out there just kind of.
Yeah. Yeah, so there's a whole bunch.
Bunch.
Cannonballs out there because he can just keep on flying around. And he's invulnerable as long as he's flying.
Yep, that's right. That's a cool power, by the way. I always liked that amino acid armored shell that he would develop as Cannonball. That was pretty cool. LT, do you got another one for us?
I just have a quick question before we move on from this. So Mike, which issue is it that Jubilee gets staked through the heart?
Jubilee has not been staked through the heart, but this is one of the reasons why Namor joins the mutants on Utopia, because the vampires from Atlantis tried to kill Namor, and Namor is pissed. Cyclops actually sends a strike team to go capture the body of Dracula and sends Namor to get the head of Dracula so they can revive Dracula so he could kick his son's ass, because the devil, you know, is better than the one who's trying to kill you. It's like Cyclops.
At least Dracula never tried to take over all of mutant kind.
Yeah.
But and isn't there at least one mutant, like a mutant like everyone kind of ignores, who could just create sunlight? There wasn't one like, oh, I can make it a nice sunny day.
Dazzler should have really hurt him, but I don't know.
I was thinking Jubilee's light show might have done that. Might have been Jubilee's like, I'm a vampire now, and like shot up the light show and killed herself. That would have been funny.
If they could have just had somebody who emitted ultraviolet light, I believe that's actually what damages. It affects the ichor that's in the Marvel vampire blood, and that's what causes them to combust.
If only there was a character like a sunspot.
That's not how it works.
Well, Mike, you just tell me.
It definitely isn't called ichor.
You just tell me, Mike, when there's an issue where Jubilee gets staked through the heart, and I will go out and buy 10 copies and plaster those suckers all over my wall.
I believe it was at the very end of Astonishing X-Men 51 where Northstar gets married. Is that the one?
That might be that
issue. I think
issue.
It right at the very end. I don't think you made it all the way to the end, LT.
No, that's not where Jubilee gets staked through the heart.
You should go buy some copies of it just to make sure.
And Josh, I'm going to need a ruling on you. Is it ichor or ichor for vampire blood?
Ichor. Yeah. I'm an ichor guy.
Really? Is it Igor or Igor?
Depends who you ask.
LT, what do you
Josh,
got?
Yeah, let's get one more each here, guys.
So I don't have a specific vampire for the next one. I have a vampire story for the next one. And that is called Daymen by Matt Gagnon, Michael Allen Nelson, and Brian Stelfreeze, put out by Boom Studios back in 2016. And this is a fantastic, action-packed vampire story about not only the vampires, but also the people that keep watch for them and do their kind of daily tasks while they're sleeping during the day. And it is a fantastic story that I think Tom would love the hell out of. It is very much a nonstop actions type of story that I think he would enjoy the heck out of. And I highly recommend that Tom reads this one. Called Daymen.
Well, I will check that out then. Josh, who's your last?
First, I have to apologize to Mike. I am incorrect. It is ichor.
Ooh.
Boom! The drunk for the win.
It actually derives because it refers to the ethereal fluid that is in the blood of ancient Greek gods, and it's named after Icarus. It is. So I am wrong. It is ichor.
Well, that is big of you to admit, sir.
I looked it up. I was like, hey, you know what? I'm not 100% on that. I looked it up. I'm dead wrong. I'm undead wrong. I don't have another vampire.
You rolled one on your exposition.
I just rolled one.
All right, Mike, who's your last?
So DC Comics, we kind of skipped over them for the most part. They have a few. I'm going to give you some honorable mentions. Batwoman in Future's End is a vampire. There have been a bunch in the Vertigo series, not only in Preacher, but also they had an entire series by Scott Snyder called American Vampire, which if you're a vampire fan, you should go check out. Looker from The Outsiders, also a vampire. Yeah, a whole bunch of ones over at DC.
A quick question about Man-Bat. Oh, I didn't mean that. Are you okay?
No, I'm dying now.
Was Man-Bat any way connected? I know Batman became a vampire for a while, but Man-Bat, was he any vampire kind of hybrid kind of thing?
I would not call Man-Bat a vampire. He's
a genetic amalgamation of a bat and a person, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's not a...
I don't recall him ever having bloodlust.
I do.
He's not supernatural in any way.
Yeah.
He's just a genetic mix-up for a guy who loves bats. Who doesn't love bats?
I love bats.
I love the bat.
Come here, Betty, 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 Bat. Betty, 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 Bat. I think I would be Bunny Man then. Mm. I love bunnies. That's a little tangential. We'll get into that later. Mikey, as long as we're done with vampires, you have anything fun at the front of the long box?
Actually, I do, but I don't know if you're going to call it fun or not.
Uh-oh.
So I'm going to encourage everybody to go out to their local comic book shop and say, hey, in September, the new Tom King series is coming out, and I want to put it in my pull list. Because it's going to be it's going to be called Heroes in Crisis by super author Tom King. And it is about a place called Sanctuary, a crisis center for DC superheroes that combines Superman's kryptonite technology, Wonder Woman's Amazonian mysticism, and Batman's billions to that finance it. Tom King was in the CIA. He was also a Gulf War veteran, and he has seen firsthand how people coming back from war get affected, and he based it on crisis centers that he sees for veterans and thought, you know what? Superheroes also face this kind of stuff. So I want to explore the psychology behind that and how it would affect different heroes and them dealing with it. So it's going to be a 7-issue series. Again, Heroes in Crisis. Go check it out. Go put it on your pull list. Trust me, you're going to want to read this one.
Well, that sounds like a great one. Tommy, what do you got in the back of the long box?
In the back of the long box, I have Invisible Republic. It is a poli-sci, sci-fi thriller. It's all about this backwater moon that has just overthrown this horrible dictatorship and kind of the backstory of how he came to power and all of the kind of story behind his rise. And it's a fantastic story. This is more of something that I think Mikey would really enjoy.
That sounds like a good one.
It's just really fantastic storytelling.
How many issues?
It's got three collected trade issues, so about 15 floppy issues, I would say.
Is that what we're calling those, floppy issues?
Yep.
Maybe.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
Floppies.
Floppies.
I guess that's for everyone to decide themselves, much like a tangent. Josh, yeah. Do you have a tangent for us?
Well, first of all, with a hole punch, you can make those floppies double-sided, if anybody remembers that. Second of all, I just finished...
Wow, deep in the vault there, buddy.
Deep in the nerd vault. Go way back. The way back machine. I just finished watching season 2 of the new Godzilla anime on Netflix, which if you haven't watched, it's pretty well done. The animation's really good. The story's a little shaky, but the end of season 2 starts to bring in some really interesting things, and so my tangent is favorite creature double feature monster. Go.
The screaming brain.
Really, of all the creature double feature monsters, the screaming brain. That's what
you're with. First one that came into my brain. Sorry, it's the first one that jumped in my head.
The first one that screamed. to your brand.
I really like that one, though.
All right.
I'm going to go with From Justin to Kelly.
Mike, I meant real monsters, not social monsters.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was just going to – I thought you were talking horror movies.
Creature double feature. Come on.
So for me, I never really got into the creature double features. What I loved as a kid was on Channel 56 when they would have the Abbott and Costello Meets the Monsters.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm.
I loved all of those. So that for me was always
I was doing I'm sorry. I was doing the silent terror scream. Yeah, there you go. What's wrong with you, Costello?
That probably just sounds awful for you people listening, by the way.
I was listening and it sounded awful to me.
And young people have no idea what we're talking about.
No idea what we're talking about.
A thousand years ago, there were people called Abbott and people called Costello.
They were comedians. There were aliens in the movie Arrival.
But you know what? Universal decided to start a monster franchise called Dark Universe. All they had to do is just replay Abbott and Costello meet Dracula, and it had all the Universal monsters in it, and it was a lot better than that shit Tom Cruise started.
True that.
I like the idea, though.
It's a great idea.
Yeah.
And then, you know, so poorly executed. If you were executing somebody with that execution, you would have given them a haircut instead of killing them.
Yeah. the House on Haunted Hill, that was another good one.
You are missing the point. I'm going with Gamera. He's a 50-foot fucking story turtle that breathes fire and has jets that comes out of his shell when he flies. What is wrong with you people? There's Gamera, motherfuckers.
There's a lot of things wrong with those people. But I kind of like the schmaltzy monster movies. Attack of the Tripods. Those were giant rocks that kept growing and growing, and we didn't know how to stop them. Anybody remember that? Day of the Tripods? Triffids.
Triffids.
Like
Day of the Triffids.
Day of the Triffids. Yeah. Giant rocks that kept growing, like in the movie. So a rock would drop, and then it would become a building, and it would fall over. And every single piece would become another one of those rock buildings. And it kept going out and going out and going out until everyone was getting crushed to death. And we couldn't stop it. Until it rained. Oh, rain stops it.
Internet, spoiler, can you hear me just shaking my head at Tom?
You think is that where M. Night Shyamalan got the twist for his movie?
I think that's where everyone got the twist for the movie. The aliens either die from a cold or from rain.
Yeah. Or that's where they got the thing for the Horcrux duplicating and what's her name's thing in Harry Potter. See, I tried to reach another audience there.
LT, what do you got?
I always like the ones that had Godzuki in it.
Wow. Okay. Yeah.
We butchered your fucking
lovable,
tangent.
Little laughable miniature Godzilla.
I like Godzuki. Put a little smoke ring.
Can you remember the Godzilla cartoon?
Yeah.
Godzuki was the scrappy
dude. Breathing fire. His head in the sky. Godzilla. Godzilla.
And Godzuki.
Godzuki.
Gold. That was internet gold right there, Mike.
Loved that cartoon.
That was a great cartoon.
It was.
So, yeah. So, why does a teenager get to keep the power of the remote control that calls Godzilla to his side? I don't trust teenagers to fucking drive or drink, but you know what? Stan over there is okay to have the remote control to the giant fire-breathing monster.
Yeah, makes sense. Who's going to take it away from him when he has it? Once he gets it, who can take it away?
Let's see. Kid sleeps at some point, right?
Does he?
Can't send SEAL Team 6 after him at 2 in the morning.
No, because when he sleeps, he just bite on that button. You don't know.
You can't send female SEAL Team 6 in there to get him.
Well, that's playing dirty.
Yeah, and you know what?
Yeah. And they probably should have.
Trust a teenager with the power to call Godzilla at will. Oh, we're going to test today? I don't think we're going to have that test today.
I think that test is looking awful flammable.
You add nothing to this. I'm just kidding, LT. I love you. Speaking of love, do we have any plugs?
Do you have anything socially relevant for us to talk about?
Yeah. No, not this week. I'm not touching it this week. There's so much fire in the universe this week.
You're not touching it this week.
I am not touching
it.
Impossible.
It could be possible in an alternate universe.
Yeah, where you don't have
lube is incredibly scarce and there's no porn.
So I would like to thank everybody who has been donating to our Patreon page, especially our latest donator. Who was that, Tom?
Dan?
Just making shit up now. Yep. We appreciate all of you who have been from the Longbox Legion who have been donating over there for $1 a month. Just $1 a month. You can get our bonus podcast, The Greatest of All Time, where every week we argue about the greatest of all time in different categories. This week we talked about the greatest X-Men duo. I don't want to say who wins in case somebody else listens to this in a different order, but
we have to listen to them gloat for the next last 9 minutes of our plugs.
Yeah, probably. I'd also like to thank all the people who are following us. We had some new followers over on Podbean, including Floating Effin' Head. Thanks for following. Yeah. And of course, good old PBG24 Foxtrot 4 Bravo Charlie Foxtrot. Thanks for our latest follower over there.
It's a long username.
That is a really long username. We also appreciate everybody who's listening to us on Google Play, Stitcher, iTunes, everywhere you can get a podcast. We also have a YouTube page. If you search for the Longbox Guys, you will find our YouTube page where we have a few podcasts there. We're going to start putting out a little bit more video content for you. And you should also follow us on Twitter at the Longbox Guys. Tom, you are doing an amazing job over there keeping our Twitter feed alive. I appreciate that.
Well, thanks. I do my best. We've had some fun conversations over the last couple of weeks. We just want to say to one of our favorite Twitter followers and also one of our Patreon followers, Diane, take a good long listen to this week's podcast and pretend you're a vampire. Because, my God, that sunburn you got this week. Did you guys see the picture of Diane's sunburn?
Diane needs to wear sunscreen.
She needs to wear oatmeal.
SPF 50, Diane. SPF 50.
SPF, fuck you. Why would you even say SPF 50? That's like wearing Axo grease. SPF 120 is like the bare minimum for me.
Well, you're very pale.
Well, you've got very fair skin, Tom.
Yeah, you just need to learn to reapply.
Yeah, that's my biggest problem. I got to reapply. I keep forgetting that.
You got to apply yourself, Tom.
That's right, folks. Hey, people. You can wear SPF, and really, honestly, 30 is about as high as you need to go. But you need to reapply it every 30 minutes for the health of your skin when you're in the sun. Just a little PSA from the Longbox Guys.
Gee, Josh, now we know.
Yeah.
And I pity the fool who doesn't use SPF 30.
See?
Oh, wait to step all over Josh's G.I. Joe reference there, Mikey.
No, I'm sorry. I thought we were going to go with Mr. T pulling up in a van and talking to children he doesn't know.
Kids, I don't know.
You can make PSAs from Mr. T's panel van if you really have to.
I do have to. I'd like to plug, we plugged our page, we plugged that. Hey, let me plug Kirby Crackle, because Mike usually does it, and I love that band also. Some of my favorite running songs, including, of course, Ring Capacity, a great running song, is on there. And they're a great rock band, great to listen to, great to find. If you can do it, go on to iTunes, toss them a couple bucks, buy a couple songs. They're super nice guys. LT, what do you got to plug?
I'd like to plug GeekOrthodox.com.
GeekOrthodox.com.
Hi, Tammy.
GeekOrthodox.com, purveyor of fine t-shirts and other geeky things.
They are also doing another commission for John Barrowman.
They are.
No kidding.
Yeah.
They are now the official stained glass makers of the Barrowman Empire.
Absolutely.
And they are also the official sock providers for Barry Boswick.
Ooh.
That may not be correct.
That may or may not be correct. It's not. We're not super committed to giving you accurate real world information here. So please take everything with a grain of salt.
Prove me wrong, Internet.
And as we say all the time, the Leanos have between them three of the sexiest feet we've ever seen. I'm not telling you what the combination is.
I would like to thank our fellow podcasters over at Who's Next Gaming. They had a great show, I guess, a couple weeks ago where they talked about EA Sports and the future of video games as it concerns sports. It was very interesting. If you like gaming and sex robots, that is your podcast. Also, the NOLA Nerd Couple is back. They're putting out podcasts much more frequently now. If you haven't checked out Movies Made Me Podcast, our friend Cheryl Jones over there is doing an excellent job, too.
Yeah. And but let's also just mention quickly our buddies over at Scream Team. Scream Team have been putting out content for years and years and years. What's the name of the girl that just started her Patreon page here, Josh?
Angie Griffin, and we love Angie and her cosplay. She is a lovely lady. Go and find her Patreon page and give her some money because she is fantastic. The Scream Team also have a Patreon page. I love their videos. I love their music. They are great creators, generally nice people. We've met them on several occasions at several cons out, and they've always been gracious and happy to interact with us and the fans while they're out there. Good people. Yeah.
Even now that they're all blown up, they kind of remember us from Six Dragon Cons ago when we were both first starting out.
Absolutely.
And I'd like to thank Angry Johnny and the Killbillies. Your songs of murder killing have been getting me through this long work week.
Let me ask you, under what conditions is the lap dance better?
When the stripper's crying?
That is correct.
That's Bloodhound Gang, though. That's not Angry Johnny and the Killbillies.
I thought for certain that was Angry Johnny and the Killbillies.
No.
That is the Bloodhound Gang, my friend.
That is Bloodhound Gang, my friend.
Well, I set you up for the wrong quote. I'm sorry about that, but you still mentioned crying strippers, so I win. And Josh, you're off to Epic Nerd Camp.
Soon, yeah. For most of the people who are hearing this podcast, if you have not signed up for Epic Nerd Camp yet, you're too damn late. But if you have, I will see you in the Poconos.
Well, don't forget to drop off your book for me, because I will get that signed by Lando Calrissian for you.
Will do.
He's coming up at Fan Expo. I'm going to take a day off and go. I got to shake Lando's hand. It's on the bucket list. I don't know why. And right. So Epic Nerd Camp, that has to be. And you're going to be teaching longsword, stage combat, and buffer combat.
No, just longsword and stage combat, and lightsaber stage combat this year.
And lightsaber stage combat. I'll borrow a couple of my lightsabers if you want. So surely Epic Nerd Camp is your sector.
For that entire week, Epic Nerd Camp is my sector. So Eastern Pennsylvania, I'm going to be in you.
He is in you. And Mike, what is this podcast like to you?
It's like Drunk History, but for comics.
Excellent. And LT, any parting words for us?
This may not be the podcast you desire. But it's a podcast you deserve.
Because you did something terrible. And don't forget what I always say. Don't diss what you hate. Just promote what you love. Sorry, Iron Fist. And you'll live a lot longer. So long from the Long Box, guys.
We're going home. We're going home. To the place where wild nerds roam. With pretty girls and dudes and kids. Going to cons is our.
I see might know face. My password.
Even your dog doesn't think you know your password.